You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Linda Earl. Linda, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Brad.
Let's talk about what you're working on now. I know you're involved in a number of things. Can you tell us about what you're involved in at the moment?
Sure. I am running the New York Arts Program now, which is an academic program, off-campus study program for undergraduates from a consortium of liberal arts colleges in the arts who spend a semester in New York doing some intensive work on their discipline. And I came here from 10 years at Skowhegan, where I was executive director of program. And I am involved in Art Matters. I have been involved with Art Matters Foundation for almost its entire history, since the late 80s. And I also sit on the board of the Jerome Foundation. And both of those foundations support artists pretty directly and sort of specialize in support for artists who are pushing boundaries of one kind or the other. The Jerome Foundation funds artist projects and also funds the organizations that support emerging artists specifically. And Art Matters, which was founded in the late 80s by Laura Donnelly, has a long history of supporting artists who are doing socially engaged work. The foundation was sort of founded in the midst of a great deal of change aesthetically and socially in the art world, and really sort of found its voice during, for lack of a better term, the culture wars, when public funding when censorship was creeping into public funding in a major way, and there was this dialogue going on about what art is in relation to the public, who gets to make it, what they get to say, that kind of thing.
And are you talking about the time of, like, Jesse Helms? And, Karen Finley, and yeah, that was a very pivotal time.
It was, and we supported all of those artists that they that Jesse Helms hated, and felt strongly they had something to contribute to the society and to the art form they were working in. So our concern was always for pushing the boundaries aesthetically and pushing the boundaries in terms of commentary.
And so, in a sense, you're also saying it was a reaction to that kind of that feeling in the air, which all of those artists needed more support because they were getting the opposite of it, you know, internationally. Right?
They were getting beaten up internationally,
right?
And I think Laura in 1985 saw that there were more and more artists who were not fitting the mold of who were doing, socially engaged work, not only, sort of the beginnings of social practice, but making statements in traditional formats, but making statements that were directly related to their identity, to their commentary, to their politics.
Right.
And how do you think
that's growing? I mean, sorry to interrupt, but with Art Matters, or in the context of that, since that time, since we're talking about it, from Jesse Helms to now, what you're saying that's a reaction to, how much has really changed? In a way, as you're saying it, I thought, God, we never really maybe recovered from that. That was a sort of a blow to the NEA, and all these other organizations had to take over, it seems. But what do you think now, looking back on that?
I think,
are we in a less censored time, or are artists self-censoring now, or what do you think is happening?
Well, I think several things have happened. I think more people are making art, and I think artists are, since the late 80s, have found found different venues to express themselves, and things have happened digitally to expand the boundaries of their reach and that kind of thing. But I think in terms of, you know, the NEA's mission remains, you know, great art for a great nation, and it does not fund artists' projects directly, and I think remains, after all these years, really skittish about content. We've seen it come up recently. At the time I joined the board, I was working at New York State Council on the Arts. I was running the Individual Artist Program, and we had supported many of the same artists. We were able to hold the course, but I got dragged around to legislators' offices in Albany and asked why we were supporting, you know, Karen Finley and many of the other artists. I mean, who are these people and why is this art? I think that's always going to come up. And I think some of the reaction was based on fear. I think a lot of it was because racism, homophobia, all that stuff was embedded, I think, in Jesse Helms' original attack.
Right, well, and also just visual illiteracy, too.
Yeah.
Not understanding what was really happening with art at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, it would struck me, but do you think artists are being silenced now? I mean, I didn't think we would talk about specifically this, but in that, again, in this context of all this, from then to now, you know, is there movements that the United States is, in a sense, censoring somehow? I know that sounds sort of broad
mm-hmm.
and maybe
mm-hmm.
conspiracy, but, you know, I mean, in Europe and in Eastern Europe, they're talking about this all the time. And then here,
mm-hmm.
we did have that kind of, that whole incident that, of course, we all know so well. And I'm just wondering,
mm-hmm.
even with the kind of, the way the government is not supporting it, you know, unlike just about every other government in Europe.
Yeah.
What effect does that have? Is that chilling on artists, or
well, I wonder.
Does it survive and prosper regardless? I don't know.
You know, it's I'm disappointed that the government just doesn't recognize whole swaths of art making. However, I think some of this is about venues, artists finding different venues for their work and their expression. And I think, you don't see people marching around protesting museum shows because of content very much anymore. So I think in
right.
a way, a lot of those ideas have entered the mainstream, certainly. Certainly the gender content issue has, although certainly that's not resolved or anywhere near it where it should be. But I think it's part of the culture now. It's and I think, you know, private support is not what it should be to support the amount of art going on. But I think more people are making it. Some of them don't care about that kind of recognition. Some of them are not making it a lot of them are not making it for the market at all or for governmental approval. And so they're going around it in a way. I'm sort of encouraged
right.
by artists' inventiveness this way and the way that what were very advanced ideas many years ago have worked their way into our vocabulary, really, our critical
Well, yeah,
vocabulary.
And of course, that's where that's where the, you know, Jerome Foundation comes in and
mm-hmm.
Art Matters, is that they've
mm-hmm.
that they've supported these artists, which now takes on a political role, doesn't it? Even if it's not about specifically supporting political work or doing something that the government should do, is not doing, and is potentially not supportive of, even though they're not
mm-hmm.
throwing in
mm-hmm.
more money.
It is. And I think one of the other things Art Matters did when the right wing sort of pushed back and, in Congress about the NEA allocation, Art Matters also started funding advocacy activity like the National Campaign for Freedom of Expression that David Mendoza founded, and visual aids, and advocacy organizations like that to do work that was more systemic in defense of artists and free expression. But even today, Art Matters is supporting work that falls very much outside of the market, very much outside of even work that is consumable. we feel important cultural work from voices that are not so much seen in institutions and in the mainstream. And some of that funding, you know, artists have themselves, of course, become activists in terms of supporting other artists. And we've funded grants to art collectives who do micro grants to community members making art and that kind of thing. We're interested in people sort of.
You mean Art Matters funded that? To be clear, that was through.
Mm-hmm. Art Matters. Yeah. Right. Jerome Foundation, in supporting emerging artists, I think we are looking at people who are at the vanguard, and emerging means something different in different disciplines, of course, and Jerome Foundation funds filmmakers, theater, visual arts writers, and dance companies, and composers. We want to make sure in funding emerging artists that there's access to, you know, the full range of people making the art, that we are representing a spectrum of practices within, you know, emerging artists, that kind of thing. So I think these foundations sort of tend very carefully to the arts ecology that they have decided to focus on, the parts of the arts environment they're focusing on.
Right. And the Jerome Foundation and Art Matters have both done amazing things. The New York Arts Program, you're saying, that's mm-hmm. the residency that people are coming from all over. How is that? How's that going? And
well,
is
that's
that
been really
kind of like ISCP kind of
well,
program,
for,
or is there another?
It's not only studio arts; it's people engaged in all kinds of practices. So these are generally juniors and seniors who have focused on the arts as undergraduates, coming here for a semester to deepen their engagement with contemporary practice in their field, whether it's theater or visual arts. They work with, you know, they as studio apprentices or production assistants, and we have a core faculty that teaches a seminar to sort of contextualize what they are learning on the ground, the gap between what they have, you know, learned in theory on their campuses for 3 years and what they're experiencing, and to sort of ameliorate that gap. And they have a capstone project that they do. And it's a sort of broad consortium of colleges that send students to do this. I'm excited about working with them because it's sort of, you know, this is kind of a pipeline to being a professional in the arts, this program. And so the more diverse it is and the more people are able to take, you know, a leap up in their work while they're here, I think the more, I think those are voices that are going to be added to, you know, arts, to push arts and culture forward in the future. That's the hope, at
right.
least. And
they are the future, yeah.
They are the future. And I think separating it from, you know, their academic aspects here, and it's an accredited program, but the experiential piece is really the important piece. It started in 1968 and was really meant to be kind of a big cultural statement. I mean, you know, it was a cultural revolution in the late 60s going on, and this program was founded by an art professor named Dick Wegenroth, who from the Midwest, who also had a studio in New York, and he thought, you know, how do I get the riot that's happening in New York in terms of the arts back into the Midwest? How do I introduce it into the academy? How do I introduce young people to the vanguard of what's happening in the arts from Ohio and Michigan? And so that was the founding premise of this program. I mean, the art world is so much bigger now than it was then. The first year, people were interning with Betty Parsons and helping her paint her galley space, and working with her pen and working in the factory, and they were, you know, they were really in it.
Well, how has it changed since then? I mean, we all know how it's changed. It's huge, and it's in the art world is so much broader. But between all the foundations and this programming, you know, you've seen changes in the art world and. Mm-hmm. And politics, from the, you know, the whole Jesse Helms thing to now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see happening? Like, where have we come? To me, it seems, you know, and everybody has it in the art world that I interview has a different sort of take on it. But to me, it does seem like it's in a, I shouldn't say a vibrant place. But I mean, how do you see any trends or anything in particular that's happening other than it's so bad?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think there was a concern a few years back, and there still is, that MFA programs were kind of institutionalizing a process that should be more individual and more critical of institutions. And, you know, you know, why do you want certification for becoming an artist was the question. And I think those were valid criticisms, even though I'm a product of an MFA program. But it was in a very different context. I think they have grown enormous. I think they've created expectations within the students that, and there's a gap between that expectation and what the audience is for the work, however, I think more as over the years, I've noticed more students. I think when I took this job actually 7 years ago, almost all the students who came to this program said absolutely they were going to graduate school right after graduation. And as I talked to students leaving this past spring, almost none of them said they were going directly into graduate programs. They wanted to travel. They wanted to accumulate experience to make art about, I think, which I think is a very healthy thing. So educationally, I think there's some changes down the road. It's I see students wanting to cross borders more often. I mean, it's a global career now, being an artist.
Well, that's what that right. That has been a huge shift. The global. Mm-hmm. I mean, just for myself, just being able to do this series, you know, talking to people all over the world,
right.
It does seem to be. Although there are some art centers, and a lot of people still feel that, you know, New York is it. It does still seem to be a global group of artists contributing constantly.
Yeah, I think so, and I'm eager to see young Americans. You know, sort of step back from the privilege of being a young American and cross those borders, because I think there's much to be learned. I just came back, in fact, for the Jerome Foundation. I went to visit their residency, the residency program at Camargo, which they've just started running. They became affiliated with the Camargo residency program 3 years ago. The philanthropist behind it, Jerome Hill, is the same as the Jerome Foundation, but it was being run as a separate foundation. Anyway, that's in Cassis, France, and I spent some time in Marseille, which is, you know, a really interesting, vibrant place, and did some studio visits with artists in La Fiche, you know, is home to, it's an old tobacco warehouse, and it's home to a lot of arts groups. And the younger artists I met were European and North African, and they had worked in at least four different countries, all of them, in their short career. You know, there were young French people who had worked in Morocco and in Berlin, and were now in Marseille, which is a very international, diverse city. I was just impressed by the fact that, and I guess this is part of, you know, has been facilitated to some extent by the European Union and the cultural policies thereof, but they were getting around in an early stage in their career, and that's what artists certainly used to do, that sense of displacing yourself. I think the French call it, you know, you dépays yourself, you discountry yourself, to stimulate ideas was very exciting to see.
I love that. Yeah, that is exciting. Linda, it's been great talking to you. I want to ask you one more question.
Sure.
That I've been asking people lately. Is there a book you're reading now, mm-hmm. or books that could be off topic, doesn't have to be about art or anything,
mm-hmm.
or anything you want to share with us?
You know, I'm reading The Voyage of the Sable Venus by Robin Cost Lewis, and it is kind of a book of poetry, but it's also a book of that reflects on art history. And there are three sections of the book, and the center section are poems that reflect on the images of black women in that she found in the Met in European painting. And some of the poems are kind of riffs on the descriptions or titles of these books. So it's kind of a fascinating take on Western art history, and from the perspective of a different spectator. And the other sections of the book are very deeply felt, personal poems. It's just a really fascinating combination, and she's a really interesting philosopher and writer. She's someone to watch, I think.
Linda, thanks so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure talking with you.
Great pleasure talking to you, too. Thank you for inviting me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.